This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome in on a Tuesday afternoon. It's Sharp Money. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. He's Amal Shaw. Patrick Maher will be alongside shortly. Welcome into the program on a day that is pretty much unbeatable when it comes to sports betting. Well, hopefully it's beatable. That's why we're going to be here for the next 3 hours, to hopefully beat some lines for you. Amal, it is the sports equinox. It couldn't get busier. We've got a Game 7 in the National League Championship Series. We have two college football games, NBA opening night, but we have to begin first with what we saw took place in Minnesota. A quick preview, though, first of what we have to come up on the program today. In about 40 minutes or so, Dave Dufour, the Athletics NBA podcast host, also assistant coach on the Georgian national team, he's going to check in, talk a little NBA, help us preview the games tonight on opening night. Miles Simmons, Pro Football Talk, going to go across the National Football League with him. Tim Jenkins, he's our weekly quarterback trainer and film analyst, drops by at 4:30 p.m. Eastern time. I know he has a breakdown on Tyson Bagent from the Chicago Bears. Interested to see what Tim saw from the rookie. And then Adam Burke, our managing editor over here at VSIN. He'll drop by at 2 o'clock. We'll hit college football, NFL, MLB, everything in between with Berkey as he comes by the D for that full hour, Amal. But first things first, last night, Minnesota Vikings taking down the mighty 49ers. I bet you wish we had that $1,000 free play today and get a better number on San Francisco.
Yeah, what is San Francisco sitting at right now?
That's a good question. I should look.
Look at that matchup last night. Minnesota and Kirk Cousins looked like the complete better team for 60 minutes. It would have been a tragedy had they lost that football game. But a tremendous job. And if you had the plus seven, never were in doubt. They get that early turnover award with the interception, but then they return the favor with the fumble. Vikings go down the field, get the score. And I thought the big play of the game was a Jordan Addison. Basically, he stole what should have been an interception, turns it into a touchdown
right
late
before
in the first
half.
Changed really the dynamics of the football game. And then Purdy with a couple of crucial interceptions down the stretch. I thought they had an opportunity late. It would have been a challenge with no timeouts. But still, they were in position, couldn't get it done, and give this Minnesota Vikings team a ton of credit. And then remember, they did it without arguably one of the best players in the National Football League, top three, top four, in Justin Jefferson.
Yeah, the adjustment on the 49ers, only a plus 475 right now. I don't know if we still would have done that with our free play. I'm still okay with our 40-1 on the Bengals at this point.
But here's the problem now for San Francisco. This was a big loss because you've got back-to-back losses against teams without potentially their best offensive players, right? Nick Chubb out and Deshaun Watson out in Cleveland. And then you go lose to Minnesota without Justin Jefferson. You've got a December matchup at the link against the Philadelphia Eagles. And why that's so crucial is it gives the Eagles margin for error if they beat them to then host the playoffs at the end of the year, because the Niners now are sitting with two losses. Obviously, it's still a long way to go, but Philly, I feel like it's going to start to hit their stride at some point. They haven't played their best ball.
Are you looking at San Francisco differently after these back-to-back weeks, or are they still power rating where you saw them all along, 1-2 in the NFL?
I agree with you still. They're still right at the top. I mean, no Deebo Samuel, no Trent Williams. I mean, these are difference makers. You imagine if we said to the Kansas City Chiefs, let's take away Travis Kelce or someone comparable. They don't even have a guy that's comparable to Deebo on that offense. And then you take away your best offensive lineman, it's a huge blow, and not only best offensive lineman, but one of the best in football, period. So this is why you see the 49ers having a bit of a hiccup right now with the injuries. That was one concern I had. I was really, really surprised this number was as high as it was, simply based on the fact that the Niners were not healthy.
Yeah, how about this, though? The preseason win total, 10.5 set on San Francisco this year. I think all of a sudden the schedule looks a little bit more different than we anticipated. Look, they've got Cincinnati off the bye next week, right? Bengals had time to get rest. Hopefully for our sake with our Super Bowl ticket, since Joe Burrow looks healthier. Then off their bye, they're at Jacksonville. That is not a gimme game either. They have to go to Seattle, to Philadelphia, as you mentioned. They still have the Ravens on the schedule. It's an interesting-looking schedule from here on out for a team that looked through the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season like they were untouchable. Now it appears there are some kinks.
Look, I get your point on the schedule, but they're only going to be an underdog in one of these games, and that's at Philadelphia. That's it. They're going to be a favorite in everything else. They're going to beat on the Seahawks like Tyson Fury beat on Wilder in Part 2 here in Vegas. Okay, the Seahawks are not a matchup for the 49ers. You go back and look at the three games they played last year. They thoroughly dominated five of the six halves. It's a mismatch or to even suggest that the Seahawks can compete with the 49ers. I agree with you, though. I think San Francisco has shown some vulnerabilities, but it's been injuries. I still think this team is the team to beat in the National Football League. week if they are healthy. There's just not enough teams right now that are good enough. Even Kansas City, as well as their defense has played, I would still take the 49ers in a neutral site matchup with a healthy San Francisco team.
Well, how about with the team that won last night, Minnesota? Yeah. You look over at the NFC North odds right now over at DraftKings. The Lions are a heavy favorite, minus 425. The Vikings and Lions play two of their final three games of the season against each other. Minnesota is plus 550. Dare I say they are not completely out of it in that division and potentially, with the way things looked last night, could work themselves back into the mix into a playoff spot?
Well, if we're being realistic, the Vikings are in a situation. They beat the Bears last week in Chicago. They beat the Niners last night. They've got the game at Lambeau. They're at Atlanta. Then you've got the Saints at the Broncos and the Bears at home. Then you head into a bye and you're at the Raiders. They could realistically be on an 8-game winning streak by the time they go to Cincinnati to take on the Bengals in December. I know it sounds a little bit far-fetched, the game.
I don't think it does.
Well, the game against the Falcons will be tough and the game against the Saints, but the Broncos, the Bears, and the Packers, what a great opportunity right now with Kirk Cousins playing fantastic football. I think the plus 550 is a great bet on this team. And then you look at the Detroit Lions schedule. Here's the thing. You're not necessarily taking the bet to make it a victory, but you're going to have an opportunity to come back the other way on the Lions because you have plus 550 on Minnesota. They have the Raiders. That's going to be a victory. They've got a bye. They're at the Chargers. I don't think that's as easy of a game as it looks maybe on paper based on the Chargers'
sure.
record. You've got the Bears and the Packers. So Detroit is set up pretty well also. Their schedule is actually pretty easy. This thing could come down to, as you alluded to, the final 3 weeks of the season.
Yeah. And for Minnesota, look, a lot of things have not gone their way to start the year. They were the big regression candidate because they were, quote-unquote, lucky a year ago, but they will get Jefferson back at some point. And if you're someone who bet the Lions preseason or early in the year a short number to win the North, absolutely worth it coming back a little bit with this plus 550 on Minnesota, simply because if it's not the Lions in this division, which it looks like it will likely be, it's definitely not Green Bay and it's not Chicago. So why not put a little bit on that plus 550 and you walk away from it?
And that's what I'm saying. That's a great opportunity. You're absolutely right. And I think the schedule for both teams is going to be favorable. I think when you look at the standings in the NFC, Minnesota has to be a strong consideration to make the playoffs. They're a pretty good prop bet if you look at them to get in. Right now, the Rams, the Commanders, and the Saints are all sitting at 3-4 with Minnesota. The Buccaneers do have the head-to-head tiebreaker over Minnesota right. with the victory, but they're sitting at 3-3. And it seems like the way Baker Mayfield is playing, you're realizing now why this guy has the number one overall pick. The Browns moved on from him. So there could be some opportunities to easily catapult that team. But Dallas and Seattle, we're going to find out over the next several weeks what they are and how good they are, because there's been some hiccups along the way. I know Seattle's beaten some teams, but they've got victories over Carolina, Arizona. They do have a good win on the road against Detroit. But I don't know if anybody's ready. And the Giants. I mean, I don't know if anybody's ready to anoint them something great.
We've made it about 7 minutes into the segment. Dustin Sweetelson, Amal Shaw, Sharp Money. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We have not mentioned Kirk Cousins, who should probably be getting his due earlier in the show than we're doing it right now, simply because Monday Night Football has long haunted Kirk Cousins. He was 2-10 lifetime on Monday Night Football coming into last night, and with a big win over San Francisco, deserves a lot of credit for what he's doing offensively. When you look at Kirk Cousins on the season to start this year, he is currently first with 16 touchdowns, second in passing yards per game, fourth in quarterback rating at 101.7, and sixth in completion percentage at 68.9% to start the year. And he did so without his number one weapon in Justin Jefferson last night. Thought Kirk Cousins deserves a lot of props for a guy that's often ridiculed, having arguably his best season to date.
Hey, to me, when I look at it, he is a guy. I did not think this offense could be able to put up this many yards without Justin Jefferson. And what he's been able to do has been sensational. 35 for 45, 378, two touchdowns. The INT, I thought Jimmy Ward made a nice play on. The 49ers defense is always going to be a challenge. You know, there was probably not a more vocal critic of Kirk Cousins during his tenure in Washington and even the early stages in Minnesota than me. And I'm not sitting there suggesting based on the performance last night that he's some top five quarterback. But he's a guy that's more than what I considered serviceable for a long time.
I'll give you this. Ready? You can choose a blank, marry, kill, if you know what I mean. You know the game?
I don't, but let's go with
all
it.
Right. Well, blank is like...
You got it.
Yeah. Fornicate.
Yeah, gotcha.
You've got Kirk Cousins. You've got Dak Prescott. You've got Derek Carr.
Well, I'll take Kirk Cousins over both of them.
Yes, that's what I figured.
Dude, listen, you can't win with Dak Prescott. You can't win with Derek Carr. But here's the thing. Nobody ever thought you could win with Derek Carr. The problem is Dak Prescott, because he plays for the Cowboys, he gets a lot more elevation in terms of stature and status because he's with Dallas. If he played for the Carolina Panthers, people would be like, yo, this guy sucks. What are you talking about?
But you and I have had this discussion a few times. There's very few quarterbacks you can definitively say in the NFL right now, that is a guy who can win a Super Bowl. But can you win a Super Bowl with Kirk Cousins?
Yes, with the right team, absolutely. There's probably about 12 guys you can win a Super Bowl with, 12 to 14 guys. But, see, I think Cousins can get you a drive. He's done that many, many times with Minnesota. When Dak needs to do it in the biggest games, Dak never delivers. When has Derek Carr delivered? Derek Carr doesn't know a time-scoring situation. Perfect example, in Cincinnati 2 years ago when he spikes the ball on first down and 10. I mean, there was plenty of time. He didn't need to do that. Everyone was like, what is he doing? And that is a perfect example of a quarterback you don't want or don't need to be able to get you over the top. I think Cousins can do it. And in this division, he's still the best quarterback. I know Jared Goff has played well, but let's be real here. He is still the best quarterback in this division.
Well, Troy Aikman said Kirk Cousins is a top 10 quarterback last night on the broadcast. Maybe we can decipher that later on in the show, go through where it is, because where he ranks. Because honestly, I'm looking at the top quarterbacks in the league and their stats so far to start the year. He might currently be a top 10 quarterback.
Listen, he's a better player than I've given him credit for. What my issue with him was, he was being paid like he was a Mahomes or Rodgers, one of those guys. And the reality,
Minnesota was desperate.
Yeah, you're right. And you know what, though? He hasn't been bad. It's been the defense that hasn't been as good. When Mike Zimmer was the head coach, you expected them to be able to defend much better than they did. They weren't able to do that consistently. They lack right now a guy who can catch the ball to the backfield effectively like Dalvin Cook could.
No,
that's one of the problems. Yeah.
Yep. All right, maybe Patrick will be back next segment. Maybe he won't. Either way, I was the MVP of this segment. Next segment, I'll explain why Kirk Cousins at 130-1, worth a shot for NFL MVP. It's Sharp Money, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back, Sharp Money. Dustin Sweetelson, Amal Shaw, live from the D, Fremont Street Experience, downtown Las Vegas. Come by, buy me a beer, buy Amal milk. You drink milk, right?
Only with cereal.
Okay, so you're going to have to bring some cereal for Amal if he's going to consume
water
your milk.
Suffices.
All right.
Thank you.
Welcome back into the show. We're waiting on Patrick. He'll be along shortly. In about 30 minutes or so, we are going to finally discuss the NBA for probably the first time in 4 months. Dave DeFore from The Athletic going to check in with us. Also, bottom of the next hour, 4:30 p.m. Eastern time, get a full quarterback breakdown from Tim Jenkins. He is our quarterback film analyst and trainer. But first, want to look at a quarterback who had a heck of a night last night and is having a monster season. Yet somehow, when I look over at DraftKings for the MVP odds, I see Kirk Cousins, Amal, all the way down at 100-1. Before I make the case for Cousins, why don't we look at some of the other guys in the mix for NFL MVP as we stand right now? Patrick Mahomes is your shortest shot on the board at plus 275. That feels awfully short for a Chiefs offense that has not looked as good as it's looked in the past. Obviously, him and Kelce still have the connection, but other receivers are not quite putting up the numbers. And I think that defense is really the MVP of that team more than Mahomes right now.
I would agree with you. And also, if you're going to make a case for Patrick Mahomes, don't you have to make a case for Travis Kelce?
Absolutely.
He's been outstanding. You know, you look right now, two of the last 3 years, it was Aaron Rodgers. Mahomes winning the MVP last year. He's won it twice now in his career. Lamar's won one out of anybody that's currently playing. You've got Rodgers, the only other one. Obviously, he's won it four times. But I don't know. I mean, look, Cousins has played great football. I'm not sure if I'm ready to jump on that bandwagon.
No, look, I'm going to have to convince you. It's a long shot. I totally understand that. Look, Tua is your second shot on the board.
I don't think. Listen,
Tua's not
winning the MVP.
They haven't beaten anybody, and they can't play their game on the road.
They can't. Well, I don't even know if they can't play their game on the road. They can't score more than 20 points against a competent opponent. Remember, they actually scored 10 offensive points on Sunday night. It was like I couldn't believe this number was 2.5 or 3. I said on Friday, I said this is my best bet in the NFL. It's a joke.
He's 4-1 right now to win the MVP.
That's fine. Of what, the Miami Dolphins?
Yeah. All right, well, third shot on the board, 5-1. You have Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts, who has not looked right. By the way, he finished the game with a brace on his leg on Sunday Night Football. Jalen Hurts at 5-1. Is that someone you think is in the mix for MVP right now?
No, Hurts has got 8 interceptions. He's got more interceptions this year than all of – as soon as he gets one more, he'll match his career high. Patrick mentioned it yesterday. Lack of accuracy from Jalen Hurts hasn't looked as crisp as he has in the past. A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith just week after week show you how good they are. They've got a good team around him. I don't think Jalen Hurts is the MVP on that team.
All right, Lamar Jackson. Things got off to a bit of a rocky start. His receivers have not been helping him out a whole lot to start the year. He moves from 12-1 to 650 over the weekend after a big win over Detroit. Lamar Jackson, I think we both agree he is in the mix, but there have been moments where that new Todd Monken offense hasn't looked quite as crisp as you'd like for an MVP candidate. So he's in the mix, but I don't think he's having that much better of a year than Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think we're talking about him because of the game against Detroit. If it was against a 2-5 team, we wouldn't even be having the conversation. But you could throw him in the mix. I don't know if he's necessarily a guy.
Okay, let's breeze through the next few, and then I'll make my case on Kirk Cousins, 100-1 for NFL MVP. Trevor Lawrence, 20-1.
He could be a guy definitely in the mix.
I think he's in the mix, but I don't think his numbers are going to be big enough. I don't think they're going to be gaudy enough numbers to jump off the page to overcome someone like Tua, maybe, who's going to have big stats at the end of the season. Josh Allen has too many turnovers. Based on what we've seen the last 2 weeks, it ain't Brock Purdy at 14-1.
No.
Can I interest you in Christian McCaffrey at 20-1?
Yeah, CMC, I think, is the catalyst for that offense. I know everyone wants to point to Brock Purdy, but I've said there's 12 quarterbacks that can play a quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers. They'll be fine.
So we're down to Mahomes, Lamar, CMC. Those are the three we think are in the mix at the top of the board for
MVP.
I'm
looking at the stats. You better elevate Kirk Cousins.
Here's the deal. When you look at Kirk Cousins, I mentioned it before we went to break. He has a 68.9% completion percentage. That is sixth in the NFL. He leads all of the NFL in touchdowns. 16 to start the year. That is more than Patrick Mahomes right now. He has the fourth best quarterback rating. He's averaging 239.9 yards per game. That is second in all of the league. And when you look at what's coming up for this team right now in the schedule, they are at Green Bay. Green Bay has the 21st scoring defense. Minnesota will move the ball and put up points.
Oh, they just talked about their schedule for the next 5 weeks. Yeah. He's got some opportunities.
At Atlanta, they have allowed the fourth most passing touchdowns to start the year. Versus New Orleans, they're pretty good against the pass. Maybe won't put up good numbers. However, in week 11, they go to the Broncos. Broncos are the 30th ranked pass defense. They're the 31st scoring defense. They have allowed the most passing touchdowns on the season. Who is second? Chicago. That's where Minnesota will be week 12 following the Broncos. After those 2 weeks, Kirk Cousins will have crazy stats, crazy touchdown numbers. Week 14 after the bye, Las Vegas, a team everyone has thrown all over to start the year. Cincinnati's going to be tough, but then Detroit twice to finish the year. Right now, Detroit is the 24th ranked pass defense, 19th scoring defense, tied for fourth, allowing 11 passing touchdowns to start the year. Also, keep in mind, Amal, Minnesota's defense is not very good, meaning there's going to be a lot of shootouts involved. That's more opportunities, more passing yards, more touchdowns for Kirk Cousins. They can still win the North. And by the way, they're going to get Justin Jefferson back at some point. All I'm saying is if Minnesota squeaks into the playoffs, or if they somehow, some way win the NFC North, Kirk Cousins deserves to be in the mix for MVP. And at 130-1, where I bet it this morning, 100-1 at DraftKings, it's worth a flyer.
Well, I would agree with you, and I'll tell you what, this is kind of looking like the Blake Snell play. I mean, right now he's sitting in it. I'm looking at the numbers as you were talking. The key to me stands out in three areas. Number one, he's second in yards behind Tua.
Yes.
He's first in touchdown passes.
Ahead of Mahomes.
And there's four other guys right now in that mix when you look at that in terms of with the interceptions. He has fewer interceptions than all these guys. He's got fewer interceptions than Mahomes, Allen, Tua, it was surprising that Russell Wilson and Jared Goff with fewer interceptions. And by the way, this ESPN QBR is god-awful. The fact that Baker Mayfield is rated ahead of C.J. Stroud tells me their thing is absolutely screwed up.
And how about this factor as well? They have no run game. So in big spots, he's going to have to make short throws to win them ball games. They can't rely on their run game. So that's more throws, more opportunities for Cousins. And the way he's dialed in right now, it's looking pretty good on the stat sheet.
I would agree with you. And when you look at from an NFL quarterback rating standpoint, he's currently fourth behind Tua, Brock Purdy, Lamar Jackson, and Kirk Cousins, just slightly ahead of Patrick Mahomes. I think it's a good bet at 100-1. And with the opportunity of this offense really starting to flow, these two wins that they've had, these are momentum victories. particularly the game against the Bears, they were kind of like, where's the season going? They could easily lose that game. They were 2.5, 3-point favorite on the road. They get the win there. Then they take on San Francisco. And Dustin, I have to tell you, they played their most complete football game of the 2023 season. They
I think Kevin
great.
O'Connell's a good coach.
I agree with you there.
I think
like
he has
him
a good system. I think Cousins fits it. I know it's like a contract year for him. I'd find a way to bring him back. I'd find a way to make this work. I wouldn't start over with a new quarterback because the known commodity that is Kirk Cousins, it looks like it's good enough. And I'm not a big like recency bias coming off of a win, place a bet like this. I'm more place the bet before the game. But I just thought that I woke up and looked, and I thought that number was way too big on a guy who's having a monster year at the top of the board. And when you look at the rest of the schedule, they'll face the worst team in defending passing touchdowns in Denver, the second worst in Chicago, the fourth worst tied in Atlanta and Detroit, and the sixth worst Las Vegas. Plus, they'll face seven defense ranked 19th or worse in scoring defense. He has a chance to keep adding to what has been a monster hot start to the season.
I would agree with you there. And, you know, can we pump the brakes a little bit on Brock Purdy?
Well, here's the thing about Brock Purdy and the thing about Kyle Shanahan's defense. They can't win when they fall behind early. They have to get that first drive, first couple drives, and get up on people. If not, they lose the ability to be as balanced as they want and to let the play action dictate what they want to do through the air.
You know, if you look at it, McCaffrey has a 35-yard scoring touchdown. I think it was a 35-yard touchdown. On that one play. But other than that, Purdy winds up with 272 yards. Kittle had a long of 28, and Ayuk of 25. I think Purdy's a solid quarterback. But like I said before, and I'll continue to say it, there's 12 to 15 guys, including Dak Prescott, that could play in Dallas, Derek Carr, that the 49ers would be still sitting at 5-2. It's not like...
How about imagine Kirk Cousins on the Niners? Man,
it's a 7-0
slob fest on Kirk Cousins this segment for me.
Well, but you know what? You're not wrong because when I looked at the statistics, they back up your argument. Like, if you actually are unbiased and you look at the voting of what the MVP odds should be, okay, Minnesota's 3-4, and you could point early on saying Kirk Cousins. But if this team winds up at 11-6 record and they win the division, Kirk Cousins has to be in the mix.
Yeah, it has to be. I mean, he stacks up across the board in every category that matters at or near the top for all quarterbacks right now in the league. I know it's crazy. I know people don't like Kirk Cousins, but he's in the mix. And if this team finds their way into the postseason, I think he can win this award. I absolutely do. I'm super high on it, and I feel good about 100-1. And you know what? When you take a shot at 100-1, if you miss, you miss.
Well, he completed 78% of his passes last night against arguably the best defense in football.
Yeah. They've made everyone look like mortals, except Kirk Cousins somehow. Doesn't make sense. Get into a little MLB on the other side. This is Sharp Money, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
With all four major sports in action, there's no better time of year to be a sports bettor. And with our new Sports Equinox special, there's no better time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Sign up now and get a full VSiN Pro access to everything we do through May 1st for only $120. That includes daily best bets, unlimited access to our betting splits, plus all of our exclusive betting content for the MLB playoffs, college football, the rest of the NFL season, March Madness, NBA, NHL, and the NFL draft. Don't miss this limited time offer. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up now. This is Sharp Money. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. He is Amal Shaw, live from the D, right over by the Sportsbook at Bar Canada. Come by, come see us, hang out for a little bit. It's the best time of year to care about sports, to watch sports, to bet on sports. The Sports Equinox, as I just mentioned in that read. So much happening, you got to keep your head on a swivel. And in case you missed it last night, the Texas Rangers are going back to the World Series for the first time since 2011. Absolutely dominating in Game 7 against the Astros, 11-4. Houston struggles at home continue, and Texas's Adolis Garcia sets a record for 14 RBI, the most in a single postseason series.
He was unbelievable. And I tell you what, he's got homers in, what, four consecutive games?
Yep.
It was just incredible what he was able to do. And really at the clutch time, I know it was 5-2 in game six.
That
matters.
You never, at that point in the game when he hit that homer, you did not know if somehow Houston was going to find a way to come back. Like, especially with Texas' bullpen.
Absolutely right. And even Leclerc actually got in a little bit of trouble last night in the ninth inning. But I think he was pitching a little bit differently with a 8-run lead. But give this Texas Rangers a ton of credit. This loss that they had by Altuve reminds me of the Brad Lidge, Albert Pujols homer in Houston many years ago. About, I think, 2009, 10, somewhere in that range. Maybe 2011. I don't remember the exact year. And then also the Dave Henderson against Donnie Moore homer in the 86 ALCS.
That was one, so yeah. Don't remember.
But it's an unfortunate story what happened to Donnie Moore afterwards. Angels were up 3-1 in the ninth inning. They were three outs away from going to the World Series, and it would not have been that historic series with the Mets and the Red Sox. But, this was an incredible comeback by the Texas Rangers in terms of what they were able to bounce back from. I think if the game was played the next day, I think the Rangers would have lost. I think they would have gotten blown out. But the fact that there was a day in between, you've got experienced guys, right? You've got an absolutely tenacious and great competitor in Max Scherzer. You've got an absolute guy who's quieter, but he's a bulldog out there in Nathan Eovaldi. Jordan Montgomery taking the ball.
Jordan Montgomery again last night.
I mean, he's outstanding. This team has put it together. How about two quiet leaders they got up the middle? Simeon didn't have a great ALCS.
No, but they mean something.
Yes.
It's bigger than the stats, those two up the middle.
They're outstanding. Seager, I just don't think because of his personality, he plays, even though Dallas is a big market, they play in Arlington, and the Rangers are not a popular team on the Central Time Zone. Seager is a top 10 player in baseball.
Ooh, that's an interesting debate, but
it's not. He's clutch. Look at the numbers with the Dodgers.
When he's healthy, look, no one believed in him more than me. I had 45-1 win NL MVP. I get it. No, that's a good conversation to have. Look, when you look at the Rangers lineup, the rebuild began when they added Simeon Seager, the two guys you just mentioned. This is a team that lost 102 games back in 2021. 102 losses, and now they're back in the World Series. If you're a fan of a team and your ownership doesn't spend money and they just keep losing and losing and losing, the Texas Rangers are an example of you're never that far away from winning if you find a way to do this the right way. That's with the right free agents. That's with the right young guys coming up. Obviously, guys like Josh Young have been so instrumental. Evan Phillips in the outfield, called up late in the year, has been awesome in the playoffs for this team. But there's a way, there's a path to getting back to relevancy, and the Texas Rangers have done it, and the way this team is built, they're going to be in the mix for a while.
I'm going to tell you who's key that you didn't mention with this team that's been really critical. Chris Young, the general manager.
Yes.
Former pitcher. I covered him when he was with the Rangers.
Princeton.
And he's from Dallas, right? Went to Highland Park, same high school as Clayton Kershaw and Matthew Stafford. But I have to tell you, he's always been, not because he went to Princeton, but he's always been a very cerebral guy. And the way he's constructed this team, the pieces, the acquisitions. Think about the guys that they brought in at the trade deadline. Aroldis Chapman took on the role of being a non-closer, seventh, eighth inning guy at times, and done what he's needed to do. He's been a good contributor. When you look at the Royals and they had that great run, they had those three guys, Herrera, Wade Davis, and I forgot one other guy in that mix there, Kelvin Herrera, Wade Davis, and who's the other guy, the sixth, seventh inning guy. But
it'll come to us.
But they were outstanding in what they did, and that's what you need. You need guys that are coming in, willing to accept their roles, and Chris Young has brought in the right people.
Greg Holland.
Thank you. And they brought in the right pieces along the way. And that's what I think has been the key. Look, I said I thought Philadelphia had a date with destiny. I thought they were going to win this series against the Diamondbacks comfortably. That's not the case. I'm not even sure they're going to win tonight. I feel like tonight's a complete coin toss. There's an argument to be made on both sides. I will say this. If I were to bet either side, I would go reverse run line with the Diamondbacks or I would go run line with the Phillies here. I think it's going to be a team that wins comfortably tonight. I'm just not sure which one it is. And then I think the Texas Rangers are so resilient. And the way Adolis Garcia is playing right now, I don't know if anybody can shut him down. We talked about Yordan Alvarez. I didn't think somebody could surpass what Yordan was doing, and that's exactly what happened with Garcia.
How about these Cuban players, too, when the lights are the brightest in these big moments? Remember Randy Arozarena a few years back, Garcia. I harken back to, like, El Duque. I would make the case, if you told me it was Game 7 of the World Series, El Duque, Orlando Hernandez would be on my short list of guys I want starting that game.
Well, you brought up a really good point. Lourdes Gurriel with a home run yesterday for the Diamondbacks, also Cuban. Shaquille O'Neal used this reference, and he's correct. They go, hey, Shaq, is there pressure when you're shooting a free throw? And he goes, no. He goes, pressure's not knowing where your next meal is coming from. When you put it in life perspective, baseball is just a small sample part of it, right? If you win or lose the game, yes, we get emotional, but whether we have a bet or as a fan. But the reality of it is these are guys that have overcome much more challenging things. When you think about El Duque's story, coming over on a raft from Cuba in shark-infested waters, coming over to Miami, it's what pressure is there when you're in a baseball game? There is none.
It's fair. Look, well, pressure in Game 7 to a degree, although Bryce Harper had a great quote about pressure that was making the rounds over the weekend. I don't know if you saw it. But he said he was asked. I think it was foul territory. Maybe Eric Kratz, who we had on the show a week ago, asked him about the pressure of being in Philly and all this and the playoffs. And he said this isn't pressure. The pressure was I graduated high school early to go to JUCO, and I was the number one pick in the draft, and I had to get here and I had to work to get this contract, take care of my family. That was the pressure. Now this is easy. I'm set. We're just playing baseball now. And they're playing baseball in Philly tonight, where, did you know this, that the Philadelphia Phillies have existed for 141 years as a franchise. This is their first Game 7 in franchise history.
That's amazing. I remember they lost the Yankees in 6, that Cliff Lee team. Yep. That was the 09 series. It's shocking. One of the great series of all time, 1993 against the Blue Jays. That was fantastic, but that was another 6. That was
Joe Carter
walk-off. Yeah. And this is going to be great. I tell you what, if you were to pick a stadium, there's probably, for me, and no disrespect to Wrigley, there's probably three places I'd want there to be a Game 7. Fenway, Yankee Stadium, and at the Bank.
That's quite a statement.
Because the crowd, let me tell you, the crowd is electric.
Arizona took them out early yesterday.
They did, but you know what? You got to give people in Philadelphia credit. People criticize their fan base, whether it's with the Sixers, the Eagles, the Flyers, or the Phillies, but they are... The Northeast, people know their teams and they know their sport.
Well, yeah, I think the Philly dirtbag fan base is elite. Like, people talk about – I grew up in New York. People talk about New York being – yeah, they're loud, but I don't know if they're quite as into it, like, no matter what, the way Philly is. I think Boston's probably a little more crazy than New York when it comes to the fandom. But I think when you look at that corridor, that area – it's Philly all the way. That's the scariest place to play, the scariest place to lose. That's the scariest place to be on the road. Like, I think these teams don't want those big moments against the Phillies. However, what I'd say for Arizona, one, as a franchise, this is their second Game 7. Do you know what the first one was?
Yeah, 2001 at Luis Gonzalez.
Exactly. That was the last
one. I still can't
one.
Believe the greatest closer, and it's not even close, of all time, and the key to the dynasty – Mo, I couldn't believe it and closed out Mariano Rivera.
So Arizona now forced a Game 7 yesterday, 5:07 on the West Coast tonight, 8:07 on the East. And there's something about this Arizona team where, look, sometimes you're too young, you're too dumb to know how big the moment is, and it feels like they've settled down into playing their style of baseball now, and all of a sudden those Phillies bats have gotten kind of cold.
I agree with almost everything you said, except the point about the game and the pressure. Look, it's how people view things and approach it. People are like, oh, this guy plays in the NBA. He's got the greatest job in the world. And that guy will tell you, he goes, I hate basketball. I just do it because I'm 7 feet tall. Look, everything has different value and different meanings to different people. And if you just go out there, and I love what Bryce Harper said. I think he really captured what the essence of the situation is. Just go out there and play baseball. You don't sit there and think about, hey, I got a runner on second. I got to get him over, got to get him in kind of situation. If you can alleviate that pressure, I think he should put you in a good position. Brandon Pfaadt, Ranger Suarez, who are you taking?
Look, I've got 80-1. I've got 34-1. I've got 20-1 on the Diamondbacks. Worth a lot of tickets on the Rangers waiting. I'm going to sit back and hope that Arizona makes it. I do have a smaller ticket on Philly that I'll have to, finagle some things around to make it closer to even with the Rangers if they advance. I don't know if Brandon Pfaadt has that in him again against Philly, but based on what he did last time, I can't doubt him.
And don't pull him too early this time, Torrey.
Well, it'll be fun. We'll get more into that later with Berkey when he drops by in the final hour of the show. But coming up next, the NBA tips off tonight. Dave Dufour from The Athletic on the other side.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't forget, on DraftKings Sportsbook this week, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every single day. Download the app and use the promo code SHARP when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. This is Sharp Money on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Dustin Sweetelson alongside Amal Shaw with you for another 2 hours and 15 minutes, and we have a lot of ground to cover in that time. We'll welcome in our first guest of the day on the program, Dave Dufour, the Athletic NBA podcast host and analyst. Also just spent the summer as an assistant coach on the Georgian national team. That is the country, not the state, just for those of you who are not aware of how geography works. Dave, welcome back to the show. It feels like we were just talking about the NBA Finals like 3 weeks ago, and now we're back with opening tip-off tonight. How's it going?
Yeah, it's going great, man. Weren't we just talking about the NBA Finals like 2 weeks ago?
Well, I
don't know what happened to the summer.
I don't think Nikola Jokic has stopped drinking yet. That's the issue that I think will play a role potentially tonight in that game with the Lakers looking for revenge against the Nuggets. But I guess first, before we get to tonight's game, a lot's happened since we last talked. We have a brand new look Phoenix Suns. We have a brand new look Milwaukee Bucks. The Los Angeles Lakers, they look kind of the same, but kind of different as well. The NBA offseason, what was the most shocking move that you thought was made from one of these teams contending for a championship?
I mean, it's got to be the Damian Lillard trade to the Milwaukee Bucks. I mean, this is a landscape-changing trade in the entire league, obviously. It pairs Giannis with the most potent offensive threat he's ever played with, which should make his life easier. So you take arguably the best player in the league, you add a top 12 or so guy, best shooting point guard he's ever worked with. Now the pick and roll is so much more lethal, and it instantly puts them as title favorites, which, remember, they were the favorites to come out of the East last year until 11 minutes into that series with the Miami Heat, Giannis got hurt. So that being able to swing something like that, and then the ripple effects of that, Giannis signs a 3-year extension yesterday. That locks you up now. You are in with Giannis for the next at least 4 years, and probably beyond that at this point. I think that this is a signal that Giannis is just there to stay. And then they'll go out and they'll trade for another guy here in a couple of years when Dame's not as good.
Dave, we're going to have a lot of time to talk about the NBA. I'm more fascinated by your summer. Bring people up to speed. You had such a unique summer that may not be familiar when we left off in the summertime. You told us you were going to be working with the Georgian national team, a former entity that was previously part of the Soviet regime. Now, obviously, it's its own country, I think, for about 30-plus years at this point. But just kind of tell people how that came about, a little bit about your background that may not be familiar with you, and what the experience was like.
Yeah, I mean, my background is that I'm a basketball coach, and I've actually worked in the media in the last 7 years. I haven't coached, but I still do a lot of scouting work. And through that, kind of made some connections and was asked to join the team. And it was an amazing experience. And, everybody wants to maybe coach or play for their own national team. And except for me, I'd like to work with small countries because I'm more about the game and fostering its growth around the world. And this is kind of how that came up. And I mean, the time that I had with the guys and with the staff, I mean, there's about, 20, 25 people. I'll never be able to replicate that. And I'll never be able to forget like the experience. It was just, it was 7 weeks of intensity, and I was learning on the fly who these guys are. I mean, I actually made flashcards of all the players and the staff. So when I was there day one, I knew everybody's names. But the World Cup and what it meant to not just the players that I worked with, but all of the players that I interacted with, you could tell that this was something they were very passionate about. Obviously, the German national team wound up winning the World Cup. They were in the hotel with us the whole time in Okinawa. So I got to see those guys up close, and the seriousness that they approached the World Cup, I think it came across in how they played. But it was incredible. I that's really the only word I've got to describe it, because when I tell the story of it, it doesn't seem like it should have happened.
Well, traitor to his country, but a big member of the Georgian national team coaching staff, Dave Dufour, is with us here on the program. No, it's really cool, Dave. But have you thought about, what if you would have had a chance to upset the United States at some point coaching with that team and how that would look as an American?
Well, no, because what's funny, man, is there's a lot of American coaches littered throughout the world. I mean, we're at the front of basketball. I mean, basketball is an American sport. It's obviously ingrained in our culture. And so we also have, I think, a long track record of producing coaches, whereas other countries don't. And so, you wind up with American coaches scattered throughout the world in various national teams. I mean, I wasn't the only American guy out there with a team. I mean, even in our group, there were multiple Americans. So, but it was, I mean, it was a great experience. And then what's funny is being an American minority out in a lot of these places. And then, you know, you do have a little bit more, you know, camaraderie when you run into Americans abroad, especially in this sort of situation. So, you know, that was actually nice because it made me kind of reconnect with some of my fellow Americans.
I love it. All right, let's get your thoughts on opening night tonight. We've got two games on the NBA slate. Let's begin Lakers Nuggets. Lakers catching 5 points. 228 is the total in Denver, where Jared Vanderbilt is out for LA, but they're a deeper looking lineup for the Lakers. Do you think there is a bit of a hangover factor for the Nuggets celebrating such a short offseason for them, a long season a year ago, and a whole lot of partying in the Mile High City?
Look, if we can get Nikola Jokic to stop scouting horses during practice, I think they're going to be just fine. I think the Nuggets are poised to do, you know, probably something similar to what we see after a lot of young first-time championship teams do. They come back the next season, and they're so much more confident that we actually see them closer to what their ceiling is. I expect this team to be better than they were last year, at least in the regular season. I think they're going to try to get a bunch of wins. We've already heard them talk about, you know, the incoming leaps that they need and expect from Michael Porter Jr. and Jamal Murray. I mean, Jamal Murray is a guy who hasn't really done it in the regular season, and he's been injured, and he usually starts out slow. So them sort of voicing a commitment to getting him going first thing, I think it signals good things for this team. I expect tonight, you said they're giving the Lakers 5 points. I think that that's not enough points for the Lakers. I think that the Nuggets might come and blow the doors off them.
I love that you said that. I want to get your assessment in terms of when you look at the Western Conference now, how you would stack the teams. Because I know the Lakers played well down the stretch, but can they be healthy enough over 82 games to really get themselves in proper seeding position?
Yeah, I think that that's the biggest question mark for the Lakers. And people have touted their depth quite a bit, but it's all about Anthony Davis and LeBron James and those two guys playing games. I mean, if you can get 70 games out of that pair, certainly, that's a top four team, I think. Their defense is going to be really good. And if Anthony Davis gets to 70 games and they're a top seven defense, he's going to be in Defensive Player of the Year conversation because he's the linchpin of it. So, you know, I do think that this is a different team than the Lakers had in the regular season. They kind of reshuffled the deck at the trade deadline. We saw the initial phase of that when they got to the conference finals. But over the long haul, it's all about Anthony Davis and all about LeBron James. Can they continue to play at a high level, but actually play in games? They need him for 70 games to be able to pull this off.
By the way, to Dave's point on both LeBron and Anthony Davis, neither of these guys have played in at least 70 games since 2017-2018. That's the last time that either of them played over 70 games.
All right, other game on the slate tonight, the Suns, the new-look Suns and a kind of new-look Warriors, plus 2.5 on Phoenix at Golden State. Devin Booker, now the point guard, former point guard for Phoenix. Chris Paul, now a member of the Warriors. How do you like the way those two teams look coming into the year?
Well, I mean, I really like the Warriors, especially because Jonathan Kuminga looks like he's poised for that year three sort of leap. He's been excellent in the preseason. Pairing him with Chris Paul in those bench units, it's going to be huge for his development. A solid pick-and-roll ball handler still, Chris Paul, but the ability to elevate Kuminga's game on the offensive end, and then we're seeing more second efforts on defense. So I like where the Warriors are right now. For Phoenix, I worry that they're too top-heavy and don't have enough defense. I mean, it's just, can they outscore the opponent? Yes, but what is peak offense in the NBA, and what does it look like night to night? They may win 55 games in the regular season and then lose in the first round of the playoffs because it's just a different beast. They're going to score. They're going to make shots. I think in tonight's game, I believe Bradley Beal's out.
He's out
for this game. So they're going to miss him quite a bit in this game because they need the scoring. I mean, they don't have defense. They need 90 points from their big three almost every single night.
Wow.
Feels like things are back to normal. Dave Dufour back on the program. The NBA begins tonight, which means there will be more Dave Dufour here on Sharp Money throughout the NBA season. Thanks so much for doing it today. I'm sure we'll do it again in a couple weeks. You're the man, and go Georgia?
Yeah, hey, go everybody. Room for everybody.
Oh, man, he just hopes everyone has a good time. That's why Dave's a good guy. All right, coming up next, we'll shift gears back to the National Football League. Miles Simmons, Pro Football Talk, NBC Sports, going to join us. That's coming up next at Sharp Money, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.